Welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode 119 for the week of January 11th, 2009. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first off, back with us is Tony Gentlecore of GentlecoreTraining.com and the Boston Herald Step Up blog. What's up, Tony?
What's going on, guys? Good to be back. I apologize for my voice. I've been under the weather this week.
Very good. Next up is Jonathan Fast of acceleratedstrength.com and jonathanfast.blogspot.com.
I apologize for my voice. There's nothing I can do about it.
No, he's just more or less in a sour mood because the Giants just choked. Choked against the...
pretty much.
Okay, I'm pretty bad, but I haven't... So they lost today? Because I have no idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eli Manning just looked like a 12-year-old girl.
Mm. What was the score?
What did they lose by, 11 or 13?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. And last but not least, we have Lee Peel from Lee. What? I keep getting that. What is it? AvidityFitness.net. Is that it? Because I know I got it wrong a couple times last week.
It's getting old. it's old news. You know. You know. I just realized that you do this in alphabetical order.
Yeah, and he screwed up.
That didn't hit me.
EFG, I guess. Should we record the whole thing again?
Not
yeah,
really.
You know, you just blew it. The whole show's ruined now. Way to go.
Yeah.
So what are we doing? Are we recording or we keep going?
keep going.
Tony, what should
do
we
live.
Do?
Do it live.
All right. Okay. So that's what we're going to do. The first piece of FitCast-related news is that Brian St. Pierre's nutrition information that was going to be on our super secret, incredible website will now be up at thefitcast.com. And those bleeping noise you hear is Jonathan Fast sending me messages, so I apologize for that.
I'm really sending the group messages.
Yes, just updates on how his depression is. The next piece of information is that the video database is just about complete, and it will be up next week. I literally have like 10 videos left to do, and all that's left is to export them all and then upload them all to YouTube. So don't worry about that. It's getting there. The next thing, I got tons and tons and tons of emails from people who want to do the online personal training. Just for everyone out there that I did reply to, please just wait a week. I'm waiting to finalize the some paperwork to make sure we can get all that stuff ready, and then we will get on that. If you do want to get on the waiting list, you can still feel free to email me, though. Tom Venuto's new book, The Body Fat Solution, comes out, or it's out right now. Pick it up on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you want to go. And the fantastic Lee Peel also did a video review of it.
Yes, I did. It's even on his page. I was so proud.
Oh, he hosted it for you, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. And he said that he would carry my child, and I'm just throwing that out there.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How would that happen?
Yeah.
Well, he related it to Arnold Schwarzenegger Jr. And I can't be sure about this, but there may be a Photoshop picture of Tom Venuto floating around with his head on Arnold Schwarzenegger's pregnant body. But that's just a rumor.
Oh, that's what the Twitter stuff was all about. Gotcha.
Yes, it is.
Is that in the book, or is that just something like you get
I think
bonus?
It's available as a bonus.
Wait.
That's awesome. The next piece.
There you have it.
There you go. I'm not going to hit on that one anymore. But the book is fantastic. Everyone should be checking it out. It's on Amazon.com. It's under $20. It's, you know, it's a no-brainer when it comes to books that you should have in your library, and especially if you are one of those that would fall into the category of emotional eaters, it will be huge. The next piece is the Photoshops that have been coming in of Lee Peel to the FitCast mailbag. And I just want to say, I really appreciate the dedication and the imagination and the interpretation that people have when it comes to these pictures. They're fantastic. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a whole blog next week of all the pictures. People are going to vote for what they think is the best one, and that person who made the best one will get the Fitcast Insider Volume 1 for free.
Are you serious?
It's the real deal.
Oh, my God.
There's some talented people out there, I got to say.
No. Mm-hmm. Did you see those ones of Liam, those festively plump women?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. This came out well. Good job. Good job indeed. The buzzing in the background is Jonathan Fass. He has a bad computer.
So nonsense. Well, that's true, but it's nonsense nonetheless.
Well, John, speaking of you, you got an email.
Yes, I did.
This past week, and I also was forwarded to it, but the person who forwarded it sent it to kevin@fitcast.com, and everyone knows that my money bag is very small, and I couldn't afford that domain name, so I had to put a dot in front of it. So would you do the honor of reading this first pre-mailbag question for us?
Yeah, if I can find it.
I thought you were prepared. I thought we talked about this.
No, I'm not prepared. That's silly. Wait, I think I have it. No, I don't. I'll do it later.
Would you like me to read it?
Do you have it? Yeah.
Oh my God, that sounded horrible.
Yeah.
The email that we have is in regards to...
Oh, here we go.
Oh, do you have it now?
Yeah, but you can read it. Go for it.
Okay. This is from, I'm just going to say, James. James says, Kevin and Jonathan, writing you guys about the question on the last show from the listener in China about martial arts stances and Jonathan's reply. I agreed with John that stance holds develop strength, posture, and pain endurance besides other benefits. As John knows, these stances have been practiced for thousands of years. Stances such as the, quote, horse are equivalent to isometric holds, holds such as warrior 1 and 2 in yoga. Take a guess how the yoga warrior poses got their name. Yes, from martial arts training from long ago. Just to point out that your show totally contradicted itself by praising the listeners isometric holds in China, but slamming isometric holds by yoga practitioners. They are of the same discipline, but it seems, in your view, one is cool and one isn't. Do your research and get it right. Jim, P.S. I don't put spaces after periods, and it makes my emails really hard to read.
Well, first, I'd like to say thank you for the feedback. And honestly, we do. We really love your feedback at the FitCast. Constructive criticism or compliments or whatever it is that you want to send us, definitely always send us. What Jim is referring to is basically the legend of Bodhidharma, which was an Indian monk, a Buddhist monk that came to the Shaolin Temple thousands of years ago and basically introduced this training as a method for the monks to become more vigorous, because before that they were, for anyone that practices Buddhism, and I certainly don't, so forgive me if I screw up any details, but you know, there are certain meditation requirements, and you have to be in a certain physical shape to be able to do them. And the Shaolin monks at that time were basically basically scribes. They were writing things. They weren't doing what they were supposed to do. They were just kind of going over philosophy, let's say. So Bodhidharma introduced these techniques that were based on his own training, which was exactly like Jim said, yoga or, you know, something like that. However, and this is where we get into the problem here. First, if you you accused us of doing our research and getting it right. Well, Jim, you need to do your research and get it right, because whenever we've had a discussion about yoga in the past on the FitCast, I've been the one that has basically said that I like things about yoga. I've always been the most, sympathetic, you might say, towards using yoga and some aspect of it in your training. And again, regardless of what I would say, this is a group roundtable, so there's no one FitCast opinion. Yes, a lot of times we agree on things, but that doesn't mean that we have a FitCast opinion that's put in a book and signed sealed. So what I say may be different than what Tony says or may be different than what Lee says, and that's good. That's what it's supposed to do. But specifically, I've always said that I like a lot about yoga. The thing that we have all agreed upon and the thing that we don't, you know, always like about yoga has nothing to do with the stance training. It has to do with the flexibility, the positions that you may have to get in, and specifically the lumbar spine and the increased flexibility of the lumbar spine. So really what you're telling us and you're slamming us for saying, we never said. So with all due respect, you need to do your listening as well. And if you're going to write a complaint about us, you know, make sure that it's actually accurate. So in honor of that, although we haven't gone through the rest of the questions yet, I would like to – and Lord knows that Kevin could come up with a lot of cool things during this FitCast. I would like to award you the first ever fail award not given to Kevin Larrabee. So
I'm
congratulations.
Happy because it's just not going to me.
Yeah.
So that's that. We will – take a quick break right now. We'll be right back with this week's mailbag. If you want to boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat, head over to turbulencetraining.com and also check out ttmembers.com, a monthly turbulence training website where you can get a new program every single month. Alrighty, for this week's mailbag, the first question comes from Cindy in the UK, and I'm going to read this one. Personally, it is directed towards Lee. She says, but first off, I love this show, and lately has gotten me through some workouts, laughing my ass off. Kevin, I just wanted to say that if we live near each other, I would love to cuddle up to Doctor Who with you. I'm from the UK. So she's in the UK, and, you know, that's quite a commute to Massachusetts.
See, Kevin, everyone can find love.
Everyone can find it.
Now, if she watched Stargate, it would be amazing.
Hey, who says she doesn't?
I'm just saying, if she did, it would be amazing.
It would be, you know, I'll get married tomorrow. But
look,
the...
Tony, we can love each other for our differences, too. Yeah. She doesn't have to watch Stargate.
Well, the question is for Lee, and she says... I have been overtraining and undereating for a long time now. The good thing, I guess, is that I wasn't aware of it. It isn't as if I have any issues with eating. I am just very busy and an active person who trains a lot. Anyway, I have no problem with taking a break and eating, but I really am tight on cash at the moment. And while your books are next on my list, I would like to start now. Would the protocol that you listed be okay? Is there any tips that you can give that won't give the book away? Cindy from the UK, quote Doctor Who fan.
Awesome. All right. Well, for one, I'm assuming that she's referencing some protocols that I've listed online, but there certainly isn't any secret, if you will, to the book. It's stuff that I've talked about a lot before. So I guess I'm going to give the book away. Here's basically what the book says. The book is basically a program that is designed to help women or men, because men do have to deal with this, but let's be honest, the majority of this issue falls with women, increase their calories in slower intervals while decreasing training. And basically, it's basically a very ultra intensive rest program. It basically guides you through small caloric increases with decreases in training and then reintroducing training and food at various intervals, and hopefully ending at you getting a refeed with you gaining as little water as possible and with you feeling better overall. There's a lot of logs online, and if you want to hop over to JP Fitness forums at jpfitness.com, you can find a lot of logs in which that people have logged their journeys of doing this, and they go into very, very long detail into what the book basically describes. I mean, they basically give the book away, if you will, and you can learn from that, and you can kind of follow the protocol from there. If I was to give anyone just any offhand advice, I would basically tell them to increase their caloric intake slowly, as comfortable as they are with it. But the goal is to eat over your maintenance level. And if you can achieve that for a little period of time and then go back down to around a maintenance level of calories, then you'll be fine. And with that, stop the training, rest, and basically treat yourself as if that you are overworked and overtrained. A lot of sleep, massages, foam rolling, stretching, things that are light activity, good for your body. This is the time to pamper yourself and to just, for lack of better words, chill out. Like, just calm down, eat a little and rest, and your body will greatly repay you for it. And then after that, if you have any sort of goals to lose fat, it'll be easier. Or if you have any goals or desire to eat at a higher caloric intake without being so overtrained or overstressed or dealing with the damaging effects of overproduction of things like cortisol and adrenal levels and stuff like that, then you're just basically going to feel a lot better. Your training will be better. Your rest will be better. And so that's basically the book. All the book does is it just tells you why I tell you to do those things and gives you a very kind of, I guess, specific detail to follow so that it's more for women that are really scared to gain weight. And it's to help you gain as little physical weight as possible. If you're not scared of gaining weight, then basically just sit on your couch and loaf and eat a lot. But if you are afraid of gaining weight, then just slowly increase the calories little by little. So that's basically it.
Lee, how many of your own clients or through your own experience would you say kind of fall into that category of having not just – I mean, they're having difficulty losing weight, but it has a lot to do with that hormonal response? Because I know I get a lot of that from the people that I might work with, and I was wondering what you found. Well,
yeah, the majority of the clients that I worked with, because I worked with a lot of women that were actually hospitalized, that were to the point of being hospitalized. We're talking 89 pounds and works on the elliptical like 3 hours a day kind of stuff, which of course is that extreme, right? So the protocols were kind of written to base upon, to be able to speak to it, even that extreme of a person. Focusing on things like refeeding syndrome and stuff like that. But I actually find a lot of cases in which that women overtrain to either compensate for their lack of dietary compliance and they still mess stuff up, you know, with their body, or they overtrain with the lack of needed dietary like caloric intake and it mixes with that clash. And just so what happens over time is it's not so much that you start to defy the laws, because we know I don't believe in that. What starts to happen is that the function itself starts to slow everything from your teft to your neat to you know, just basically how thyroid functions in the body, everything slows down. So it's not so much that all of a sudden you're defying a caloric deficit, it's that your actual caloric deficit lowers, and it makes it really hard. Like, for example, just recently one of my clients, she wasn't even training that what most would consider to be that aggressive. She's an Olympic lifter, but she would do like 1.5 to like 2 hour sessions like 3 days a week, and no matter what we put her calories at, no matter what she did, really it just wasn't happening. She had to completely just knock off the training. Like, she just had to knock it off in order to lose the fat. She wasn't losing it. She had to switch to an isolated, like, kind of more simple body split exercise program and just really relax. She had to focus on rest and sleep. And with that, her caloric expenditure increased, because I track most of my clients with either Body Bugs or SenseWares or some sort of mechanism in which to give a vague, rough estimate of their caloric intake. All my clients get tracked like that. And we saw an increase in her actual caloric expenditure, even with a decrease of training, because her stress levels on her body and on her, you know, mental capacity was lower. So, I mean, you know, it's a very common thing for me to work with. How much that applies to the general population, I don't think much, you know, but in my area with the kind of women I work with, it's really common, and it's a problem that I face a lot.
Yep. Cool.
Next question I'm going to take and throw that over to Tony. So get ready, Tony. This comes from Brent in Ottawa, Canada. A friend of mine has just started training at a gym that offers body pump group fitness classes. I wanted to get your guys' opinion on these classes because they are quite different from the strength workouts typically discussed on the show. A typical class has the participants crank out up to 100 reps for each major muscle group part: legs, chest, back, arms, legs again, shoulders, and abs. Obviously, participants cannot lift a lot of weight due to the extremely high number of reps performed. The instructors are well-trained, and the classes are quite challenging and a lot of fun. My friend is female in her mid-20s, 35-inch waist, 45-inch hips, 195 pounds, and has a goal of losing 30 pounds of body fat. Will body pump classes help her improve her body composition and reach her fitness goal? Thanks for answering my question, and keep up the great work with the show. And again, that was Brett. So,
well, my answer to that, his first question is, will body pump classes help her improve her body composition? And my answer to that would be, yeah. I mean, if she goes from doing nothing to doing something, you know, it stands to reason that she will probably improve her body composition. As far as, you know, is it a great long-term class to take? I would probably lean in the direction of no, just in the sense of my experience, when you take someone who's deconditioned, especially in this case, and you put them in a class where it's not really supervised all that well, because, I mean, those types of classes I've seen, I've worked at places where you have upwards of 30, 40, 50 women going at once. There's not a whole lot of one-on-one supervision. You have a drastic chance of getting an overuse injury, you know, and John, you know that as well as I do. But certainly, you know, if it's one of those classes that where it gets her moving, she goes, has a great time, great. I think it'd be a decent way to get a little bit of an introduction to some form of exercise. And I mean, I know as well as everyone else that, you know, women generally gravitate towards those types of classes because of the camaraderie that they have. You know, that's a big reason why you don't see a lot of women in the weight room, is mostly it's guys there and they're going to feel intimidated. So they go to the body pump classes or the yoga classes or spinning classes. But at the same time, and that's great, but at the same time, I think from a long-term perspective, those type of classes, if someone were to follow a class like that long-term, you know, they're using some maximal weight. If you don't use something, you're going to lose it. So when you're talking using a weight 100 reps and using some maximum weight, you're just not – I mean, I think it's just going to elicit a weak, frail look. And, you know, I'm not a fan of that. I don't think it looks good. You know, and, yeah, I am definitely biased towards a quote-unquote strength training approach. But so I think – long story short, I think short term, great. If it gets her motivated, it's fun for her. She enjoys going. That's great. But I think the overall goal should be to get her into a little bit more of a supervised environment where she can. Because who knows? I mean, if she has, you know, issues with her lower back or her hips or her knees, I mean, that stuff has to be addressed as well. But you know, get her in the weight room. I mean, it sounds like Brent has her best interest in mind. Maybe he could take her in and sure thing or two, and that'll be my answer to that.
I'm just gonna butt in and just give my two cents real quick. We had something very similar to that where I work, and the trainers had to actually do it. So I went through the class and I was sore as crap.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 days after that. And if you're an untrained individual coming in and you do something that's like a body pump class, you're going to be sore for the next 2 or 3 days minimum, especially if you don't do any kind of warm-up, you don't do any foam rolling, any kind of recovery stuff. You're going to be sore, and that means you're going to be out of the gym for 3 days. So is it going to be the best thing to do right off the bat? You know, probably not.
And that's the thing. Like, I feel bad, you know, always bashing these type of classes, because in the long run, yeah, I don't agree with them, you know, and people are always going to view getting sore as being effective. You know, like, oh, it's a great workout. I'm sore for 3 days. Awesome. And, you know, and we all know that's not the smart way to approach things. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good point you brought up, Kevin. It's unfortunate that that's the way the people view it, that, you know, the sorer they are, the better the workout was, but when in fact, you know, in the long run, it's probably not the best approach.
Yeah. I'm going to throw in my own two cents, so now we have collectively 6 cents, which is nice, because now we can start making money and put it back into the FitCast. But what I was going to say was, I mean, I think in general, I agree with you guys almost completely. I think that what I tend to look at these types of things is, you know, when we've got someone, I mean, she's got a decent amount of weight to lose. She's not, you know, I don't think that we'd call her obese, but, you know, 30 pounds is a pretty decent amount of weight to lose. And I think that in general, you know, do it until it stops being effective. You know, so kind of like taking what Tony said and taking a little bit further. If this is what gets her in the gym, if we're assuming that she has not been active before and this is what she'd feel comfortable in doing, just let her do it. And she will have the advantage of at least learning some of these exercises, learning some of these techniques. They may be lightweight, but then again, if we were going to start her off in the gym anyway, we wouldn't be having her doing, you know, 4-rep sets and things like that anyway. It would be relatively lighter. We'd need to allow connective tissues and bone strength and density and things like that come into play as well. So
yeah, but you wouldn't throw the equivalent of like intervals at her either. When you're doing stuff like that, they're more or less they'll do like 20 reps straight, then go right on to something else without even resting. Like
that's true, but that then becomes the issue of who's actually teaching the class, because technically speaking, the class should be at their own pace. Yeah. You know, so technically I agree with you. I mean, definitely way too much. Most of those classes are way too much, way too soon. And I used to teach certain group classes, like not a step class or anything, but I teach like group weight training classes at Rutgers when I first started there. And it's exactly half the group is like, oh my God, it's so hard, I can't keep up. And the other group is like, oh, this is so easy, you got to make it harder. And it's, you can never please anyone when you do those classes, which is probably why I don't do them anymore. But in general, like I said, I mean, if it gets someone in the door and it gets them active, you know, I'd always rather see someone active than not. Even if they're doing something that maybe we don't agree with, it's still better. And, you know, even the idea of like the overuse injury, like Tony said, I mean, absolutely. When you're doing high volumes and not necessarily with proper form or muscle activation, you're definitely headed down the potential of having an overuse injury. But then again, I'd rather have a knee replacement than a valve replacement for my heart. So, you know, it's kind of like, let's, you know, what are the goals and how important are these goals relative to the risks? But after, you know, having said all of that, you know, I just want to point that out, to not necessarily say, oh, don't have her do that. And I don't think anyone really did, but, you know, be aware of the limitations of this workout, of this style of workout. And, you know, and like what Kevin was saying, the idea of specificity, you know, you're going to walk in there, you haven't done something like this before. Even us, if we're in shape, if we went to take this class, we'd be sore as anything for days. So, you know, hopefully she's going to take it at her own pace. She's going to do what she can and then work her work capacity up as she goes through the classes. And I would give Brent the advice of just saying, just try to steer her in the right direction. You know, applaud her efforts, encourage her, and then start to drop little hints of, you know, if you want to join me, we can do some different workouts, we can go a little heavier, whatever, and start to, you know, put her in, you know, what we would consider to be a better direction.
Bird. All right, John, well, you got the next question. So,
ready then.
Hey guys, my dad is going in for a hip replacement in about 6 weeks and has asked me to help him lose a few pounds before operation. He is 63 years old, about 5'9 and 195 pounds. He usually trains 4 days a week on a program with a trainer at his gym. It consists of a stability ball crunches, reverse crunches, leg extensions, curls, push-ups, shoulder press, and lat pull-downs. All exercises are done for 3 sets of 10. He does the same workout each day and has been on this program for around 6 months and is no longer getting results. Shocking, I know. I was planning on getting him to do a full body workout 3 times a week, bench, pull-ups, rows, RDLs, and squats, changing the reps and sets for each day and varying the exercises. D-bell bench on Monday, barbell bench on Wednesday.
I like where he's coming from. Bench and every day he lifts.
You just hear it and you can't not comment on
Sorry.
It. Like, it's a problem, dude.
I'm benching tomorrow.
But I need help with the lower body exercises. I think he will be able to do the RDLs, but he can't squat or lunge without significant pain. Any ideas on lower body exercises that he may be able to do, or should he just leave them out altogether until after the surgery? Thanks for your help. I love the show. Keep up the great work, Troy.
Yeah. I mean, that's, again, it's one of those tough things because you're doing, you know, Troy's doing the right thing because he's trying to help his father, you know, stay active, stay in shape. But there's this looming issue of a hip replacement that's around the corner. So I would recommend definitely trying to keep him active. And I think we'd mentioned this either the last show or the show before it or something about when we look at surgery, the people that go through the rehab better were the ones that were active in the first place before the surgery took place. People that were not active then have kind of, you know, their tissues and the quality of their tissue and muscle and strength and joints aren't as good as people that have been active. And so they've kind of got two things going. They've got to rehab and they've also got to get stronger, whereas opposed to people that were active just have to get back to the function that they were before, which was already a good level of strength. So I would definitely say to try some stuff. What you've got to do is you've got to find out what his tolerance is, what is going to make him feel better and what's going to make him feel worse. You're not going to be able to challenge him with a whole lot of weight or weight at all. It could very well just be body weight exercises in a limited range of motion. There's almost without question not an option of a full range of motion with him. He's got joint problems, joint issue. I'm going to assume it's because of an arthritis type of condition that he's getting the joint replacement. And that's going to make it a lot harder for him to use a full range of motion. So don't even really necessarily think about it. But that doesn't mean that he can't do like a sit to stand from a chair or a bench or something like that. If he can't do that, consider isometric exercises like a ski or squat, you know, a wall sit, something like that. Those are the most basic types of exercises. They are the first round of rehab exercises that we'll use after like a joint replacement exercise, and it's minimal risk to the joint itself, and it's usually pretty good to help with the stability of that joint. So if you can't get him dynamically, think isometrically. If you can't get him in a full range of motion, get him in a partial range of motion that's not going to hurt him or make him feel lousy. If you can't get him with a lot of weight, use little to no weight. But, you know, you have to be creative. But ultimately, like I said, you don't – your goal right now is to basically maintain the strength that he has. And maybe there's a potential to improve him in certain respects. But don't think in terms of what you might be doing in your own workouts because it's not going to apply here.
Sounds good. Well, Troy, I hope that helps you out and your father. Hope he – everything does go well with the surgery and keep us updated. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with more of your mailbag questions. We got about five left to go. Be right back.
Michael Boyles, strengthcoach.com, the number one source of performance enhancement information on the internet. Are you looking for cutting-edge information updated almost every day? Do you like info-packed forums with almost real-time answers from industry experts? Then log on to www.strengthcoach.com. For only $1 for 14 days, you can test drive the number one source of performance enhancement information on the internet, strengthcoach.com. Have you logged on today?
We're back with a mailbag. First question in this section comes from Jason Hodges. He asks, question for the gang. I'm a beginner. Usually when I start a new training plan, I am derailed by DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness, peaking at 48 to 72 hours after lifting. Usually is pretty severe, not just sore, but painful. This happens even when I try to start off with relatively light weights and limited sets. I would appreciate any advice for preventing DOMS and for treating it. And that's from Jason Lee. What do you got for Jason?
It's kind of a weird, not to say it's kind of a hard question to answer a little bit because I don't really have any sort of background information. I can say that here are a few things I know from past experience of people who deal with these kind of problems. One, he doesn't say where he really has it at. Usually when people say, though, to me that they deal with extreme muscle soreness after training, it's generally in an area where they're dominant in their muscles, particularly in the quads. I know a lot of people that will do we'll get into training programs or restart training programs, and they end up doing like a lot of squats or anything that basically leaves allowance to a lot of the same muscle utilized, basically using the same muscle over and over again. And so they'll experience extreme muscle soreness. The other aspect of it is simply nutrition. Nutritionally based, are you eating properly? Are you getting proper protein intake? I don't know. You didn't list your diet, but if you're not getting a proper intake of protein or even carbohydrates, if you're totally ignoring nutrition around your workouts, then that can cause a problem. If you're deficient in certain nutrients and minerals and vitamins, it can cause issues. Anything from potassium to magnesium, zinc. I mean, there's so many things that can be covered by this as an issue. I'd be curious to hear a little bit more of what Jason is doing to be able to give a little bit of a better answer, to be honest, because it's just so vague. But that, I mean, those are the areas I would hit. Check for muscle dominance and the areas where you usually have a lot of soreness. Check to make sure that your nutrition is on, and at least make sure that you're getting proper pre and post workout training. I usually am not overly religious about that. It doesn't have to be crazy, but if you're dealing with this kind of an issue on this level, then you may be someone that needs to take it more seriously. And make sure that you're getting in, you know, fish oils, multis, and getting that backup just in case emergency standby of vitamins and minerals. So that's, I guess, my really generic advice.
Yeah, John. Jason, another thing, people, you know, it's amazing how many people don't go into the gym and warm up either. So it could be a big deal.
That's such a big pet peeve of mine.
People who just come in and then just walk up to something and just go at it.
We still do that at our facility with the kids, and it's like they do their warm up, and you know, then they look at their program. What are they doing today? Oh, I'm doing trap bar. I did 225 last week, so they load 225 on the plate on the trap bar. I'm like, what are you doing? It drives me crazy.
Okay. John, you got anything to add for Jason before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, again, just, and this is a general, I mean, questions are awesome, but please, it's kind of like saying, oh, I'm trying to run a mile and I can't. Why can't I? I mean, it's just, we need more info. So, you know, just a little bit more detail as far as like what you're doing. Like, you know, like Lee said, I mean, she nailed it. You know, where are you feeling this? Is it because of a dominance issue? And is it because of this? You know, it could be so many different reasons. So we don't know.
John, do you want to get the next question?
Sure. From Michael Dowd. I've just started listening to your podcast and I really enjoy it. Lots of good information. If I can ask one question regarding creatine, I understand it has been studied and shown to be effective and safe. However, I've never seen anything written on the effects of creatine on cardiac muscle. Certainly increasing water levels in cardiac muscle cells would be devastating. I want to start taking creatine, but without a good answer to this question, I don't feel comfortable adding it to my diet. Any help would be greatly appreciated. Keep up the good work. Cheers. Again, that was Michael Dowd.
Well, Tony, we'll throw this one off to you because I know, especially dealing with a lot of parents, questions like this seem to come into play.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one because, I mean, when we get, I wouldn't say overbearing parents, but concerned parents, they're concerned for their kids and whatnot. So we have, kind of like a handout that we give parents on, you know, the ins and outs of some of the supplements that we advocate to our athletes, such as like Surge and creatine and fish oil. As far as the creatine aspect, a lot of times what we'll tell them outside of taking the supplement, we'll tell them that, you know, it is in your everyday diet. So if they're eating red meat and such, they're going to be getting creatine. And certainly, as far as research and studies going towards cardiac muscle and whatnot, I will defer that to either Jonathan or Lee. I know they're a little bit more research-based than I am, but I'd certainly be interested in finding out what they have to say in regards to cardiac muscle and water. But just in terms of dealing with parents, I mean, we've always said that it's safe and effective, and you know, we have no issues giving it. I mean, outside of any athletes that we have with kidney issues, which we have had, you know, we definitely advocate it towards everyone that we've dealt with. It doesn't say that everyone takes it, but we certainly are big fans of it. But The cardiac, that's out of my realm. I'm gonna defer that to either Lee or John in that regard.
Who wants it first?
Shoddy, not doing it.
Unless we're all stumped.
No, I have to. From what I'm not going to say that I'm huge on every single aspect of it, but I mean, I have read research as it's not a common question, but you know, there's cell volumizing properties and heart volume, not good. From what I understand though, it's actually one, it's a different kind of mechanism. A heart doesn't fatigue. It works on electric pulses, and I'm not going to claim I'm just anatomy know-it-all here, but the mechanisms are different from what I understand studying. As far as the research goes, creatine is actually shown in two researches to have positive effects on chronic and congestive heart failures. And I think that there is some research to show that it can help with blockage as well. I don't know to any sort of large degree on how much that it has been covered, because that's usually not an area that it goes into much. But I looked at it briefly, did like some PubMed searches, and I did not find anything in a negative aspect. And as far as what I know of the mechanisms, it's a different kind of a working thing. So that's a very loose and interpretation of things of what I researched briefly, but that's about all I got. It doesn't appear to be a dangerous thing from anything that I'm seeing and from what that I have researched, but I don't feel comfortable enough to give a definitive.
Yeah, I generally agree. I mean, I haven't looked at any research concerning creatine in the heart in a while. I remember when I had, maybe a few years ago, I found the same kind of stuff that it seemed to be generally considered to be positive for heart, or at least not affecting any heart muscle. And like Lee said, I mean, it's a different type of muscle, so it does work on a different, slightly different way. What I was going to say is anecdotally, and again, I mean, a question like that, I mean, it is a medical question. If you are really concerned, you know, you could always feel free to ask your physician as well. No one on the FitCast is a cardiac trained, you know, physician, so cardiopulmonary expert. So take our advice with a grain of salt. But there is also the kind of anecdotal evidence where so many people use creatine and have used it for a pretty decent amount of time, and we haven't seen any type of heart, at least to my knowledge, any type of heart issues from creatine usage. And if there have been, I've never come across it, which means that it's so small as to be probably a negligible finding. So yeah. you can at least, you know, kind of look first at that type of anecdotal evidence and say, well, you know, it's a good question, but if it's not actually coming out in our findings, both, you know, in research and in real world, then there might be something that we're missing here in terms of like why that wouldn't be the case. And I think Lee kind of nailed that.
Well, there you go. The next question comes from Ish. About 4 years ago, it was 236 pounds and 27% body fat. My blood pressure was pretty high, and that got me scared. I got a personal trainer for 10 sessions, developed a workout and nutrition plan with him, and 6 months later, I was rocking 190 pounds. I kept this up for over a year and got really skinny. I was close to 165 pounds with very little muscle mass. Now I'm 27, 5'10", 179 pounds, around 18% body fat, and fairly comfortable with my body composition, except for one thing. I'm becoming one of those guys at the gym, generally in good shape all around, some definition, but with a bulging belly. It's starting to get to the point where I can't hide it, even if I suck in my gut. How do I get rid of this, get out of this? How do I not become like Jim Neidhart, who I guess was a wrestler in the 80s and 90s for the WWF? Is it diet? Am I not working out my abs enough? Not enough cardio-ish? And this is a question that seems to come up a lot in when people are talking about losing abdominal body fat. So, Lee, what do you got?
Well, I had to Google real quick, and there's pink pants, so I'm trying to hold my composure. you know, it sounds like to me, and from what I'm seeing of pictures, that one, he has an issue with maintaining his muscle mass or increasing muscle mass. It seems like that he's been kind of dieting off and on a little too much. It's like it seems pretty like he died. He was kind of, if you will, skinny fat. He dieted down. He didn't have a lot of muscle mass as it was there. And he dieted down to a lack of having any muscle. And it's common for a lot of guys who they diet down and they see a lot of these before and after pictures and they expect to diet down for it to shed off and there to be an ass load of muscle there. Not usually the case. You know, usually you're just as lacking of muscle as the average female is, and you dieted down, you got the body fat off, yay, but you don't really have any muscle to speak of. And so there comes that time in which that you're going to have to move into a bulking program in which that you eat in an excess of calories and you do some lifting and you hit the weights and you go hard, knock off the cardio and go to eating and lifting, because that ideally is going to get you where you want to be. It would seem like if you're really concerned about adding any sort of body fat or getting into that kind of an area, that you would want to maybe go into kind of a culking, if you will, where you kind of cut, you bulk, you cut, and you bulk. If you're at 18% body fat, you obviously have a lot of body fat left to lose. But at the same time, you're 5'10 and 179, so that the numbers are a little weird to me that you're giving me, in my opinion, from what I've seen. And then you point to the picture. So abdominal fat is the last place for guys to lose fat generally. You probably still have some body fat to lose. But if you say that you have little muscle mass, what I would recommend doing is to eat a little bit in excess. Give yourself a break. You've obviously been cutting for a while. Use that little bit of excess to put on some muscle and then get into a cycling program maybe when you start cutting back down and start to cut, build a little and go in that way and kind of see where you go. I would say maybe trying a little something like that because obviously just the cutting is not really working too much for you. And as far as diet goes, our abs go, you know, that's in the kitchen. It's made in the kitchen. Watch the diet. Be more specific with that. Focus on that a little bit more. And I think all around you'll see better results. I know that was a little bit of an all over place answer, but some of the things with the question are just a little weird, particularly like the stats. I think he needs to hone in more on this diet, but I also think that it seems like he's been going at it for a while. I think he needs to take a break in this particular situation and add on a little bit of mass for a little bit and then dive back down. Even though his portioning may not be that great and he's not quite low enough to where I would usually recommend that. It's the length of time that he's been going that I would recommend. So I'll end it there.
So it's not that he's not doing 8-minute abs.
Exactly. Well, you know, it could be, though, because it is an amazing program.
I you know what? I just, like, it is very common. I just wish more guys would wake up and realize that, you know, and I know it's, I use this term a lot. We say it all the time, and it probably gets old, but lift heavy shit. Like,
yeah.
You know, he talks about cardio. Am I doing abs? Is it a diet? And Lee's right. He's probably just been doing cardio and dieting. He needs to lift weights, and she's exactly right. All these guys expect for there to be massive amounts of muscle underneath the fat when they diet down, you know, thinking that, you know, I'm going to get down to 150 pounds, I'm going to be ripped. And no, there's no muscle there. Like, if there's no muscle there to show, it's not going to show. So I just really wish more guys would just wake up and say, you know, you need to go to the gym, you need to lift heavy shit, and I promise good things will happen. I've seen it happen all the time. We've had guys at CP in the same exact situation. They come, they do their thing, they're in a really good environment, and great things have happened in six, seven, eight, 9 months. Kevin, you've seen it. And it's the mentality, you know. You can't be so caught up on, you know, am I not doing cardio enough? Do I have to get up early and do this cardio? Am I just eating? You need to eat and you need to lift heavy stuff.
Well, we're gonna take one more break and we'll be right back with the end of the mailbag, where we have two more questions, including one about foam rolling. Is it good or bad? Find out right
after this.
Dun
dun dun.
If you're looking for the highest quality, best tasting protein powder out there, head to blackstarlabs.com where you can save 10% when you use the code FIT10 in the coupon section at checkout. Now, the final segment where we just talk about formerling. But the first question comes from Dale. He says, every now and then I leave a note requesting a glute ham raise machine in the suggestion box at my university gym. I realize that is not the best approach to get my college to buy one. So I will meet with the facility manager to discuss this amazing piece of equipment and how it would be beneficial for the gym. What could be some convincing arguments for a glute ham raise machine would benefit the members of the gym? Dale, and Dale, it's just not going to happen. It costs over $1,000, and there's no way you're going to be able to justify it, dude. So just figure out other ways to do it. Deadlift, throw.
Do a natural. You can do a natural glute ham raise, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at this point, unless you are at, like, a D1 college where it's going to be in the athletic weight room, you're screwed. So just you will not find a commercial gym with a glute ham raise. It's just the facts of life. That's why you can go train at Crescent Performance in Hudson, Massachusetts, right down the street.
I completely disagree with everything that you guys say. No, Dale, explain to him.
He has no shot.
Women,
it's not going to happen, Lee.
No, explain to him that women on a glute ham raise machine is a valuable thing to have in a facility.
Why? Because it will attract more men?
Have you ever watched guys stare at women on a glute ham raise? And use the word
"ass." Oh no, glute ham raise. Oh no, I have. I lied. I'm sorry.
I made up a joke that I told Tony once, and I was hoping you remembered.
Oh shoot. No,
I'll talk later. I'll talk after the show.
We have so many inside jokes. It's like, I don't remember that one.
Oh, and I said I'd drink it up last week too, man. You missed it up.
Did at BSD?
No, at the podcast.
And then probably no one got it.
Yeah, John, you remember
and I would have laughed. You know I would have laughed.
We're talking, like, Jen Heath was talking about some shakes, and I'm like, yeah, drink it up.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know what that was.
Okay, but yeah, Dale, sorry. Just work around it, man. It's not, you know, glute ham raises are awesome if you have a glute ham raise, but, you know, if you don't have it, doesn't mean you can't get stronger.
I mean, you just got to realize most commercial gyms, I mean, they look at it as a cost benefit. Like, how many
absolutely.
People actually
no one will
use
know
it
how to
first?
Use it.
What's that? Yeah, most people aren't even going to use it as a glute ham raise.
My knees hurt, and they can't
Sports
do
Club
one.
LA had one, like, which surprised the hell out of me when I started working there. But most people use it to do crunches on.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? And, like, more people are going to look at it. Like, I remember when we got it, trainers even looked at it and go, what is that for? Like, I was like, it's a glute ham raise. And they're like, what's that? And so, most people aren't going to know what it is, let alone use it for its purpose. So, it's not going to happen.
Sorry, Dale. The next question comes from Sean. He says, I recently read a blog post by a popular Z Health guy. Don't remember the name, but I will tell you who it was. It was Mike T. Nelson on his blog, but the he says, I think you guys might know what I'm talking about, and we do, and he says he's claiming that we should not be foam rolling, especially with pain. I don't want to speak for him, but I believe his point was that fixing the muscle tissue does not fix the impairment that caused the damage in the first place. I believe that he also mentions that the lessening of the pain from foam rolling, normally reserved for thinking we are progressing, could simply be our mental adaptation. Again, I don't want to speak for him. In a related note, in Alan Cosgrove's T Nation article 5 Aha Moments, he mentioned something that he learned from Gray Cook. He mentions that poor range of motion may be an issue of stability instead of mobility. The pictures kind of tell the story if you look the article up, but I was struck by the ending of that section in which he claims that the difference was that the mind was, quote, shutting down in the range of motion. These may be unrelated, but in my mind, I link them together. Both seem to be suggesting that the mind controls these muscular tissues more than we believe. What do you think about the view, this view of foam rolling, and or the view of the mind being more of the hurdle than most people think? Sean, John, what do you got?
Well, I'll take the second half first, the part about neurally stiffening a joint. If you read a lot of this work comes from Shirley Sarman, who's a physical therapist, an amazing physical therapist, and she wrote an entire book basically on that concept. When we talk about tight muscles, and people always say, oh, my muscle's so tight, I need to stretch it. And a lot of times that's not really the right way to go about it, because the muscle feeling tight is just a feeling. It doesn't actually describe what's happening to the muscle. Mike Robertson has written a lot about it too, as has Bill Hartman. If I have an anterior pelvic tilt, for instance, so that my hips are tilted forwards, what that does is that actively stretches out my hamstrings. And yet everyone says, oh, I have tight hamstrings, I need to stretch them. How can a muscle be tight if it's constantly on stretch? The answer is that it's not tight because it's a short muscle. It's tight because it's a stiff muscle. The muscle is actually overactive because you've got a position of the body that's not where the body wants it to be. So if we allowed that position to continue, we'd get into a lot worse trouble. So the body will actively stiffen a joint, stiffen an area through muscle activity in order to protect it. You get that a lot with spasms when they just won't seem to go away. It's the same type of concept. We have, you know, maybe we moved in a bad direction. A lot of times it'll happen like in our shoulders with the scapula. Maybe the scapula isn't so in good position on the back, and so we try to stiffen up that area, and what ends up happening is we take a weakened muscle, it tries to activate, and it spasms out. You get that shot of pain in your back, and it doesn't go away because the body won't release that muscle. So that's really what we're talking about here. I know that I've blogged about that a few times too, and I think we've probably talked about that on the ThickCast also. So there are times where stretching actually is a bad thing, and it's not – you can't just go on your feeling of, you know, this is a tight muscle, I need to stretch it, but actually looking at your position or the position of someone else and saying, okay, if this feels tight, but I'm looking at you and I know that that muscle is actually not quote-unquote tight, but it's actually on stretch, why do you feel tight? And maybe the answer is not – stretching what feels tight, but stretching what is causing that feeling of tightness, which is another muscle that is legitimately short. So the perfect example, again, hamstring feeling tight, but in fact it's from a shortened hip flexor that's causing a stretching of the hamstrings and what we might refer to as being locked long, which was in another book, Anatomy Trains. So some shout outs to some reading you guys can do. However, Mike had written a blog about foam rolling. And I do agree with some of the things he said and disagree with a lot of the things that he had said as well. I can only paraphrase what Mike said. And, you know, he's actually has an article on the ThickCast, and, you know, I wouldn't want to put words in his mouth. But in general, he kind of talked about the idea of foam rolling before a workout and how it can cause inhibition. So it's a bad idea. So I'll take that point first. It is a bad idea if the tissue is, you know, normal tissue, but we can use that to our advantage as well. So he referred to the idea of foam rolling and mechanical pressure causing neural messages to shut down a muscle to relax it and to stop the pain that's occurring, because pain is a signal to the body to cause something to happen or to shut something down, basically to stop the pain. So if we have, for instance, again, those short hip flexors, now we know that our tight hamstrings aren't really short and we need to work at the hip flexors. Well, maybe before a workout, maybe it's not a good idea to foam roll the hamstrings in that sense, but maybe it is a good idea to foam roll the hip flexors to follow that up with some static training, flexibility training, or some dynamic warm-ups to increase the flexibility of the hip flexors and to activate the glutes and the hamstrings that are not in a good position, and therefore make our overall positioning better for our workout. So we can take something that Mike was talking about as a negative and turn that into a positive. The other thing that he had mentioned was, again, that pain idea, and that pain is a bad thing. So why are we foam rolling, you know, and for what purpose? Why do we want to foam roll? What is the meaning of quality tissue? Pain, you know, he had mentioned that pain is a signal for activity, but pain is a signal that something is wrong, that there's something going on that shouldn't be going on. Now, he does mention the idea of if you're foam rolling, you're kind of covering up the problem, and I totally agree with that. to a point, foam rolling should be part of the process to get the problem solved. So if we have, again, that hip flexor, for instance, the psoas, and it's been shortened over time due to the position of the hips, we may not only get a shortening of the muscle, but there may be some poor tissue developing because of that shortening. We have less oxygen, less blood flow to that muscle. We may develop some scarring in the muscle and around the muscle as well. And this does happen. It's a natural fibrotic process when anything does not receive that oxygenation. That's why we use full ranges of motion when we stretch, because if we don't use a range of motion, we lose it. And the body makes sure of that by laying down fibrous tissue. So when we have this type of problem, Mike is saying, well, don't just cover it up, do something about it. But if we don't work our way through all the issues, then it becomes more difficult to actually solve the problem. So Mike talks about the idea of getting to the joint, getting the motion at the joint. And I would absolutely agree, but I would do so by using some of that soft tissue work to break up some of the tissue problems first, and then work on the activation, work on the strength, work on the general range of motion. So when I work, Kevin, we were talking about the bag of tricks, and honestly, in my bag of tricks is my hands. I'm ART certified, and when I have a client or a patient or whatever that has a pain, an issue with a movement, if I find stiffened tissue, if I find neurally active tissue, or I find tissue that may be a little bit scarred over from weakness or lack of motion, that mechanical pressure, yeah, it hurts. But I would argue that it's not hurting because I'm jabbing it. You can find areas of your body, you could probably squeeze your forearm or something and not have a lot of pain from it. But then there are other areas like the hip flexors maybe, where you kind of put your finger on and it hurts. Well, that means that there's something different. There's something wrong with the tissue that hurts. It doesn't mean that, well, you shouldn't put your finger there. It means, why is this causing pain? And let's figure that out. And sometimes the thing that is hurting it is going to ultimately help it, by breaking up what's causing that pain to begin with. But I do agree with Mike. If all we use is foam rolling, you're not going to get such great results. We do need to add in everything else. So kind of a little bit for what he's saying, I don't think he's completely wrong. And he's a Z Health guy, which is a little bit of a different approach to things. So obviously he's going to have that kind of conceptual framework to work with, and which is not a soft tissue approach. And so that's cool. I respect that. But I'll throw it out to Tony too, because I know he loves his foam roller.
Oh, I mean, so shit, that was a knowledge bomb. I can't top that. But we're big foam rollers at CP. Everyone gets there, they start with their foam rolling, and I totally agree. Certainly the pain, where the pain isn't necessarily what's causing the pain. Obviously something else is causing the pain, but you need to break up the scar tissue and the unhealthy tissue and get it healthy, and foam rolling is definitely going to be in that equation. Of what limited experience I have with Z Health, I've never done any of the courses personally. I have heard there's good things with every aspect of whether it's Z Health or any other modality that people use. I mean, the joint manipulation and stuff like that. I mean, I've taken bits and pieces of stuff from Z Health, the foam roller, and just taking it and use like Alan always says, use what is useful, disregard what's not. And I it really boggles my mind when people get in the one mindset of like, it's this and only this. And it's unfortunate, because I mean, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And while I'll agree that foam rolling, for in certain cases isn't going to be fantastic for some people, you're not supposed to do it till it's excruciating pain, but certainly you need to break up scar tissue, as John alluded to. You need to break up that unhealthy tissue in order for it to get healthy again. And foam rolling is absolutely going to be something that we'll always use. That was an unbelievable response by John. There's nothing I can say that could top that. So.
Oh, stop. You'll make me blush.
Man crush is just...
Oh, my God.
Another thing that I wanted to say, too, using an ART technique, I know that I've done a good technique or I've done it to the appropriate tissue when I see an immediate response. And that kind of, you know, again, it's an anecdotal thing. When you see that immediate difference and that immediate change in the position and the muscle activity of the antagonist of the muscles that are working against whatever I done the release on, then you know that you're on the right path. So the example would be, you know, something like someone comes in with lower back pain or something, and I notice that their shoulder is elevated relative to the other side, and I determine that maybe that's their upper trap and levator scap with overactivity. So again, we're talking about the idea of neural stiffening of a muscle because of an instability, because maybe they have poor activity of the serratus anterior. So what Mike is saying, you know, and again, I'm paraphrasing, so I may be putting words in his mouth, but basically what he's saying is, well, if I do soft tissue work, I'm never going to get that, you know, serratus anterior stronger, or I'll never get the improvement of the joint mobility just by doing soft tissue work all day. I completely agree with that. But on the other hand, by leaving that, you know, that position of that shoulder, we're already ensuring that the serratus anterior will be weak. We're ensuring that there will be a limited range of motion at the glenohumeral joint to begin with. So we need to do that soft tissue work so that we can then get the position of the shoulder better, more appropriate, and then we can start to work on the strength of the muscles that are weak there. But I mean, I may be feeding some words into his mouth that he's not talking about. So, you know, again, forgive me in advance if that's not accurate or if I'm misinterpreting what he had written. But, you know, and he does make, you know, in his defense as well, since he's not here to defend himself, you know, he does talk about not all soft tissue work is bad, and that's not what he's saying either. So I don't want to make it seem like, you know, like he's completely anti-soft tissue work. I just think that he was probably trying to talk a little bit more about using it as maybe an adjunct and maybe not even using it so much. So maybe that's just a difference in how much we're advocating its use. So leave it at that.
Very good. On that note, we are going to wrap it up here and wait until next week to get to some more of your mailbag questions. So before we do go, just want to remind everyone to check out John's daily updated blog at jonathanfast.blogspot.com and acceleratedstrength.com. He's probably going to do something this Monday for the Giants' victory. Oh, I mean, they're lost. They lost. I forget about that.
I was actually going to do it on the Patriots game this weekend. I thought it was an awesome game this weekend that they played.
No, they had trouble because their plane couldn't get there from how heavy all those Super Bowl trophies and rings
were. No. They were playing. They were golfing in Maui. They were doing all kinds of cool stuff like that. They were probably playing some cricket. I heard cricket is very popular with teams that didn't make it to the postseason. So, yeah, I was going to blog about that.
Nice. And then you can check out Tony Gentilcore's blog at the Boston Herald Step Up blog. Just go to bostonherald.com, click on the blogs, and click on Step Up, and you will be there. And also gentilcoretraining.com. Tony, we got anything crazy coming up on the blog this week? Maybe another crazy miscellaneous Monday?
Possibly. I got a few things in the works. As you know, probably might be leaving the Herald soon. So.
Dropping bombs.
What was that?
It's dropping some bombs.
Yeah, it's just something I've been thinking about. So might be leaving that shortly, and if that's the case, it will be more of a daily thing. So I have other stuff that I'm working on. So the blog's kind of taking a backseat for a couple weeks, but you know, I'll try to get something up as soon as I can.
And then there is Lee Peel at avidityfitness.net.
I am going to be doing a ongoing guide to how awesome Jonathan Fast is for that really excellent explanation. I'm a little hot from it, to be honest.
It happens.
Yep. That's
Kevin,
about it for
me.
I
just updated my Facebook, by the way.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but that's going to wrap it up for us here, folks, as you can pretty much tell from how we are ending the show. You can check out thefitcast.com. Check us out on iTunes. Please submit a review. And you know what? I say that a lot, and this past, 2 weeks, we went from something like 30 reviews on iTunes to, let me just check the most recent number. We have 73 reviews on iTunes.
Nice.
That is awesome.
That is awesome, dude. Everyone out there, thank you so much for putting up those reviews. And for some reason, there's one that's one star that still pops up on the front page.
Aww.
I think it had something to do with Tony and my youth exuberance.
Could be. Did it have anything to do with my feedback from the mic?
Actually, I think it did. We had about 14 people unsubscribe via iTunes because of that. And if you want, you can just spam that subscribe button. And I think that boosts us up. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you to do it, but if you're at work and have nothing to do. But again, that's it. We will be back next week. Soon we will be having Chad Waterbury on. I still do have your questions, and we're just trying to set up a time to have him back on the show, and we got quite a list of upcoming guests, including some people that we've had on in the past that might be coming back to talk about some stuff. People that might live out in California, might be Scottish. Maybe. All right, that's it. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Take care and stay tuned for some outstanding off-topic discussion. If you never listen to this stuff, trust me, you want to listen to it this week. Take care, everyone, and have fun at the gym this week. So here in the off-topic session, which is always popular, and people fast-forward to it to listen to it first. So first, I get to talk with Tony.
Hola, what's going on?
Tony's back and he's sick.
Yeah, it sucks. I'm always reluctant to say that I'm sick. I never say that I'm sick, but I had the sniffles. And, you know, and I'm sure since people are listening to this after the fact of the podcast, they're going to notice that. But, I have the sniffles. So I know I sound like I know I sound weird.
Well, Tony, I bought a PS3.
Yeah, you liking it?
With some gift certificates, and I'm back. I'm on the Blu-ray bandwagon thing.
You got the Blu-ray?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know we discussed this a couple weeks ago, right before you left. But I bought a Blu-ray. I didn't buy a PS3. I just bought a Sony Blu-ray player. But it's unreal. Like I bought my first Blu-ray disc was The Dark Knight, and that was the first movie I watched on my Blu-ray player, and I was basically jerking off on the couch the entire time. It was insane. It's awesome.
I got the Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles on Blu-ray season 1, which is amazing. And oh, I forgot I'll talk about that later. But I got Iron Man, not The Dark Knight.
Yeah. I love Iron Man.
Iron Man is just such a good movie. And
it
I
is.
Can't wait
it
for
is
the
a
next
good movie.
One.
That was definitely the best superhero movie up until The Dark Knight.
And also Stargate Continuum is on Blu-ray DVD, so people can pick that up. Very good. Have you seen any new movies, Tony?
I did. I saw a really, really, really good movie 2 weekends ago with Michelle. You know who I'm talking about, Kevin.
Yes.
The Wrestler. Absolutely, undoubtedly one of the top 3 movies I've seen this year. I would put that up there with Slumdog Millionaire. Ooh. And The Dark Knight. But The Wrestler, Mickey Rourke, unreal. I really like the director it's Darren Aronofsky. He did The Fountain. He did Requiem for a Dream, which is one of my favorite movies. But I really liked the director. But Mickey Rourke was unreal in this movie role. Like, it's one of those roles where you watch it and you're like, there's no one else who could do that role. You can't picture anyone else doing that role. And apparently, Nicolas Cage was penned in to do the role.
That would have been horrible.
Yeah, I hate Nicolas Cage. But Marissa Tomei is also in it. She shows her boobs, which is always nice. But yeah, absolutely fantastic movie, and the Golden Globes is on tonight, which I'm going to watch, and I don't care if you flame me for saying that, but I'm watching the Golden Globes,
That's all right, man.
And I think the wrestler's up for Best Picture, but I think Slumdog Millionaire will win it. But that was a really, really good movie. So everyone out there, go see The Wrestler. Phenomenal movie.
Tony.
Anyone who's grew up watching wrestling would absolutely enjoy this movie.
So you're not going to watch 24 tonight?
No, I'm watching The Golden Globe. You know what? I was the biggest 24 fan. I watched it from season 1, episode 1. Each week, I watched season 1 through season 5. And I didn't watch season 6 because I was just busy with work and stuff. And I heard it was atrocious. And then
it was horrible.
You know, I didn't watch the movie that was in November. Didn't they do a 2-hour movie back in November?
I'll tell you what. Same thing. And I watched season 6. I've watched from day 1 to the last minute of the last season. As much as it sucked, I watched every episode. And I swore up and down, I'm not watching this ever again. I'm not watching 24. I'm done with it. I'm done with this time waster. The movie was pretty good. And now I'm pulled back in.
Thank you. Good. And actually, a fun fact, the guy that was with Jack Bauer, it was in the movie, the British dude, or he might have been Irish or Scottish. I think he might have been Scottish. He is actually one of the lead actors in the upcoming Stargate Universe TV show.
Wow.
Keep that in mind, folks.
Well, isn't also in this season, isn't Tony coming back as some like evil guy?
Tony mm-hmm. Almeida's back, man.
Oh, and but as a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's just dumb. Come on. The dude died in an explosion.
I know, but they didn't say he was dead.
Like
you
like,
didn't
he was,
see
he was
the
in
body.
Jack Bauer's arms, like dead.
Yeah,
his head wasn't decapitated from his body, so he's all right.
Oh, jeez. But no, I didn't realize that was on tonight. But I'm set on the Golden Globes. I'm eating my lean beef and broccoli as I watch the Golden Globes.
Nice. Lee, how about you? How you been?
I've been good. I had an incident today at Starbucks. Do you want to hear about it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm at the Starbucks and I'm sitting there and this guy walks in and I totally do one of those duck, don't look at me, don't see me things because I think it's this guy that I got drunk and made out at a party with once after I worked. And so it looks exactly like him and I'm sitting there and I'm totally hiding and I'm typing and I'm like, please don't see me. He's ordering coffee and I realize it's not him and I look at him and I'm like, I think that's fucking Chris Daughtry. I think it is. But you know, it goes and I'm like, whatever. So I keep typing. He gets his coffee. He leaves the store and like white when he like leaves the store, you would think the girl behind the cash register won $1 million and she just starts screaming, "Oh my God, that was Chris Daughtry!" And just goes nuts. Like the whole Starbucks starts to like explode into all these people that in fact knew that it was Chris Daughtry.
Who is that?
And I'm what?
Who is that?
So wait, so Lee, you made out with Chris Daughtry?
You know, I did kind of. In a way,
nice.
he looks like exactly like this guy I made out with once, and so I just think it's really funny that I was sitting there, and I was like, oh my God, like please don't look at me, and it was like Chris Daughtry, and not the guy that I thought I made out with drunk at
First
a party.
Of all, you guys are saying his name wrong.
What? Daughtry? How do you say his name?
It's Daughtry.
Daughtry. Well, then that makes all the difference. But
wow.
Yeah, but that was my incident today. And they like freaked out. It was like 15 minutes of talking about it. And I was just sitting there really glad that it wasn't the guy I made out with I was like, yeah.
And with that whole conversation.
I would totally give you a high five.
Dude, with that entire conversation, do you realize with that entire conversation, Lee actually took Tony's man card from his hand and put it in her own pocket?
Yeah. That's not how you say his name.
It's not how you say his name, but if you made out with him, I totally high-five you.
He's hooking up. She's having one-night stands while she's drunk, and you're correcting her on the guy's name.
Ever. Not a one-night stand. Make-out session, in which that led to me getting so drunk that I slept in my car, and I drove home in intervals of, like, every, like, 3 hours.
Holy
and
shit.
I only live 10 minutes away. Like, that is how messed up I was that night.
Hmm. BPL official man card.
Wow.
Good for you.
Good job.
Good job.
I got, speaking of Starbucks stories, I got recognized at a Starbucks.
Nice.
Nice. Yes.
By a guy or a girl?
By a dude.
Nice. He must have listened to last week's show.
I didn't listen to last week's show, so I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Were you not able to listen because you were peeing sitting down?
Oh my god.
All the listeners are just crying out. Okay, so what was it? Okay, so you saw a guy at Starbucks that recognized you.
Yeah, it was. I was there. I'm gonna shut up. My head is too congested. I can't think. I don't have any witty comebacks. I'll just take it.
Oh god, it's so did you recognize you from T Nation or
that and my blog.
Nice, the Boston Herald Step Up blog.
Yeah,
no longer sponsored by Reebok, but hopefully
it's kind of a downer. Like, you know, it's a fairly I guess the area somewhat the cafe across the street is known to be what's the proper term I can use? Well, it's a hot spot for the gay lifestyle, I should say, for lack of a better term. So, like, when I'm sitting in Starbucks and I'm getting ready to leave, you know, I just pack my laptop, you know, and I walk towards the door. And whenever a guy approaches me, he's like, hey, you know, I'm just like, oh, man.
Get all excited. I mean,
yeah, you know, it happens, whatever. But, you know, he's like, oh, are you 20 Genicore? I'm like, yeah. And then he's like, oh, I read your articles and your blog, and I'm a trainer at there's a BFC down the street. So we talked for like 5 minutes. I mean, he was a nice kid, but before we even started, it's just always a little disconcerting when just some random dude approaches you, and you know what I mean? But
you get?
But after the fact, it was great. I mean, he was nice. He was really nice.
Sweet.
It's a good, yeah, he was a really nice guy. He's probably gonna come out to the facility and check it out eventually. But so if he is listening, I'm just saying, I'm not saying it was weird. I'm saying it just before you, I'll shut up.
Yeah, just stop talking, dude. So if people did miss last week's show, you know, I can make this pretty simple. I think we had a timestamp. That's 31 minutes and 52 seconds in episode 118. So if you can jump to that, and then you'll know why we're laughing so much.
Is that to do with me?
Indeed. It was. Remember when you called the show last week?
I didn't call the show last week.
Oh,
what? But you did. I thought. Huh.
Oh, what the fuck happened? Kevin, you.
I was talking to Lee before we even like got
Tony,
on the.
Were you high on Dayquil? You don't remember?
Oh man, what? So what was it? 31 minutes? What?
31 minutes, 52 seconds. I'm sorry, man. It was just. I'm gonna say this is Jenny's fault.
Does this have to do with my initial appearance on the FitCast?
Has nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Okay,
not at all.
As in yes.
As in absolutely, it does. It's all right, man. It's, you know, it's fun for the whole family. But
yeah.
All right, so that's going to do it for the off-topic discussion. I had to prematurely end it due to some of the topics getting
that's
too off.
That's a perfect choice of word.
Fuck, I'm going to have to edit this out too.
Well played, Lee. Well played.
Thank you, thank you.
The question is, do I leave this in or not?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you do.
All right, fine, I'll leave it in. All right. Thanks for listening to the show, everyone, and I hope you enjoy that as much as I just did.
It's going to happen.
That's what she said. And I know I can't do that.
I was about to say that.
we do a fitness podcast, right?